This is Game On. With your host, Seat Williams.
Game On!
Jumping the streets of Vegas, 3 o'clock, standing tall, feeling good here on a hump day. Seat Williams, Ari, back in the controls with the ones and two. Plenty to get to today. Nick Hamilton, NBC Sports LA, is going to come up about 10 minutes from now. Yeah, we got the giveaways. You know it. The holiday season is rich, and I'm playing Santa. Las Vegas Bowl. We gave 3 pair of tickets away yesterday. Congrats on the winners. Going to give 1 pair away today in that final go-round. I'll give you more details in a moment here about exactly what's going on because I'm involved. I'll be at the tailgate party down there. Right before the game, come over and see me. I'll give you more information here in a moment. Lighters up, dope at the bottom of the hour. We got some really good stuff in here. Oh, man. You're going to love this show today. Glad you could join us. Ari, how are you? Back in the saddle.
I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yes, the G-Knights losing 3-2. Tell us about the game. You were there last night in the shootout.
It was rough. There was a lot going on, so I'm a little bit... it was, first of all, they were supposed to win this game from what I understand. We were talking about it in the halls. I'm pretty sure you had a bet with Chrissy. Is that right?
No, that wasn't me.
No?
That was, so you're talking Nashville? Chrissy had a bet with, who did she make that bet with? There's somebody, I set the bet up.
Okay, yeah.
In our meeting.
Mark?
And all I know is in our meeting, I set up a bet. I said, you know what, you guys should bet this. And eventually, she had never bet before, so I talked him into a bet, and she ended up winning the bet.
That's what. And here I am, like, giving her a hard time, like, oh, you're crazy. And I was like, you know, you guys are going to lose, just so you know. It's not
right.
Even, this is not even my expert opinion. It's just, and yeah, they. It was a good game from what I understand. They played, the Golden Knights played hard. They really need to, their thing is they usually start off, like, fire in the beginning, and they're up 1-0, 2-0. And then, you know, it's just a matter of them kind of keeping the lead. And that wasn't really the case. I think I have my notes.
And it was a return of Mark Fleury. And they had won 4 games in a row, so it snapped a 4-game winning streak. But Chrissy, by the way, in case you're wondering, she is the producer for Cofield & Company.
Correct.
And she's a good girl, man. I love Chrissy. We clown around and joke in the hallways
fun,
in the production a lot. And I can't recall who it was in the meeting yesterday, but I talked them into a bet.
Was it Magnum?
It could have been Magnum. It was one of the crew members. It was Magnum.
Somebody got taken.
It was
all
Magnum.
I know.
I talked the bet into him, and they knuckle bats. I'm like, yes. And she won the bet. So, unfortunately, at the loss of the G-Knights after.
Yeah.
They've won over 66% of their games. They're in a good shape. I think they're 19-9-1 now with that loss. And they'll be just fine. They set so many records already as an expansion team in any pro franchise. The fanfare is good. I mean, the place is pretty packed again, right?
Yeah. Well, I think Thursday's the big game against the Penguins, so the crowd was present. It was just a little less than the normal. The energy is always there, but yeah, that's a big rivalry. So one of the things is they actually played. They played like Carolina would play, coming off a long road streak and everything. Like they just didn't have it. So, but the cool thing is there's takeaways from this. There's a lot of things that they're learning as they're losing these tight games. And I think they tighten up. It seems like when they lose or they almost lose and, you know, there's situations, it seems like they learn from their mistakes and kind of come back and nip it in the bud. For example, in the beginning, the third period was always just really rough. They would get to the third period and then they would just kind of crap out and everything would just go south. And now that's not the case. They almost won yesterday. They pushed the overtime. So they're coming around. I have a lot of confidence in the team, honestly. There's a lot of naysayers, but that's what happens when you surprise people and you start winning. So.
Yeah, but when you have an expansion team doing what they're doing.
Exactly.
I mean, what more do you want?
Right.
This is incredible.
I agree. And it's hockey in Vegas. Come on, we don't even get snow practically. So,
how cold is it in that T-Mobile?
Oh, it's cold. It's cold.
Can a brother survive?
No. Whatever little brother I have in myself is not surviving. It's rough. I had 4 layers yesterday.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I have the tank top, like the wife beater, and then a long sleeve shirt. Then I put a T-shirt over that, and then I stand in the concourse as long as I possibly can handle until I have to put on, you know, like the jacket, sweatshirt thing I have, sweater, whatever you
want to call it. So it's colder than this room.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And then the key for me is that it's cold in there, and then we go down to the outside. So, like, inside T-Mobile is actually where I'm, you know, where I'm supposed to be comfortable seeking refuge. And then from there, I have to go outside. So it's an interesting adjustment. It goes from cold to colder. But
you're having fun and you're learning some things about hockey.
The people are really fun, too. On Beer House, it's a really cool environment. It's out there. It's Vegas, mostly, you know, Vegas locals and some tourists, too. So it's cool.
All right. Before we get to Roger Goodell, that's our topic here. Before we turn our attention to Nick Hamilton, NBC Sports LA, morning after 8 to 10 a.m. Dash Radio, you can check him out. I just want to update you on what's going on this weekend. I will be over at Sam Boyd Stadium. Come down and join me for the Las Vegas Bowl. I'll be broadcasting from the Bud Light Pregame Fan Fest before the game. Gates open at 9 o'clock. The festivities from that point before the 12:30 kickoff, you can still get tickets, only $35, but they're going quickly. Get it now. Oregon, Boise State, I'll see you there Saturday. Gates open at 9 o'clock. I'll be there, I believe, at 10, but yeah, come and find me. You come in the gates, you turn left, and you roll, and you'll run into it. You'll see our tent there, the hospitality center where Bud Light is. So, hey, come on down to tailgate with us, looking for that. And we'll do a ticket giveaway the remainder of the week, and also we'll do one in the final go-around today. As for Roger Goodell, like him or not, genius, a money-making machine. You keep in mind, Jerry Jones didn't want him to get the extension, all right? Roger Goodell was paid annually $44.2 million, and then, of course, he got the extension. Now, my computer's been freezing up on me, but I'll see the best I can do here. Roger Goodell, extension goes through 2023, okay? He's 58 years of age, and he's going to retire at that point. So you go, where are we now? 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 20. So 6 years from now, he'll be, 64 years of age. He's going to retire as a multimillionaire. And the incentives in his contract make him on the Forbes list one of the – he's paid like CEOs, like the most highest paid CEOs in the country. I'm going to say it now. I don't think anyone has said it before, but they're going to make a movie about this dude. Whether you like him or not, he's a money-making machine. What he did for the NFL in turning their earnings, which they were worth like about $884 million, into like $4.3 billion, okay? The league, the worth of the league and the franchises. So he's flipped everything, and I'm telling you, I didn't like the disciplinary action, the way he handled various players, things of that nature, but in the end, when you look at what he's done for the league, and he's very, very intelligent, like players that have been retiring in their mid-20s, some guys have played 4 years. You know, you make your money and you get out. Some guys don't even get to their second contract. Other guys in the middle of their second contracts before getting the third one. They're retiring because they know about the CTEs that concuss. Roger Goodell understands that too. And he doesn't want to be the man in charge when all this flips. And that's probably about the time that the big changes in football will happen, about the time he's leaving. For the predecessor, God bless you, you're going to have some big shoes to fill, because he turned everything from the TV contracts to the amount of money he's made to the incentives that he added. His family's got insurance for the remainder of their lives, including his. A private jet for the remainder of my life. He got all this stuff because he is very bright and he knows when to get out. A spokesman for him said, hey, guess what? I'm out of here at the end of this contract. I'm not going through this anymore. I don't need to. I'm already wealthy enough. My family's taken care of. I used to didn't like him. I do now. I admire him. I guess that's the perfect way to term it, is I admire the guy because he's a money-making machine. You can envy him. Look, none of us will ever see the kind of money he's making, but I'm not going to hate on him because of that. He's brilliant. He's brilliant. I don't agree with everything. And, of course, the majority of the public didn't agree with the way he handled the national anthem, and it wasn't a protest against the anthem. It was for fairness and justice in the inner city with the police. They didn't like the way he handled that, a lot of people. But in the end, Roger Goodell is a money-making machine. That period. They'll make a movie about him. I'm telling you, $200 million richer, $220 actually. He's sucking it in. This guy's doing well himself. He's out in Los Angeles with NBC Sports LA, Nick Hamilton. Nick, brother, how are you?
I'm doing good, Sweet. How you doing, man?
Doing great. How about this Roger Goodell contract, huh?
Yeah, give me about 30% of that. I'll be okay. I'll take it.
You can't hate on the dude for making money, right?
You can't hate on him for making money. It's just the fact that, I mean, it's like any other commissioner. I mean, he's a puppet on the string, you know, doing what he's told to do, which happened to be the owners. So I think Roger Goodell is doing the job that he's supposed to do. Now, can you get mad at him or some of his discretion that he did not use in certain matters? Yes. But at the same time, you have to understand that the players' union gave up a lot of their leverage in the last CBA.
Thank you.
You also have to look at the players' union. And when anytime you have lawyers in the mix, they're always going to be out for their best interest and then your interest second, because it's all about the almighty payday.
Yeah.
So that you have to look at the NFLPA. You have to blame the NFLPA for a lot of this nonsense that's going on, because they gave the power to Roger Goodell to be judge, jury, and executioner.
You know, and he's in a league that's a hurt-me sport. It's not a contact sport. It is a violent sport. And he's getting out at the end of his contract in 2023, which I think is smart, because he'll have his money, he'll have all the incentives, the jet, the insurance for his family for a lifetime, and the money. And he'll leave. And the next person that steps up is really going to have their hands full, because the football game we're seeing today is not going to be the football game we see after 2023.
No. I mean, as my man Jay-Z once said, you can't knock the hustle. And that's so true when it comes to Roger Goodell. His people fought for him. They got the money that they want. They got the perks that they wanted, most importantly. And even when he steps away, he'll still be a part of the NFL in some way, shape, or form, because, like you said, he has the jet. He has the benefits. His family has the benefits. I'm looking to get adopted by Roger Goodell at that point.
Yeah. It's a money-making machine, man. Listen, let's go to the games now. Enough about Roger. He is the current reigning sheriff, and he'll be putting the badge down after 2023, because he got what he wanted. And Jerry Jones, the almighty Jerry Jones, couldn't even stop him. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's go Saturday. Now, I know you're staying in town because are you going up to Seattle for this one, the Rams game?
No, I'll be in town for both games. No.
Okay.
I'll be nice in the warm 80-degree weather in L.A.
There you go. Yeah, be careful. Oh, update us on the fires. Are you near any of them? What part of L.A. are you in there?
No, I'm away from. I'm nowhere near the fires. Most of the fires have been contained, except for what they call the Thomas Fire, which is burning out there in Ventura County and now burning into Santa Barbara County, up there near Montecito, which is a very affluent area. I know at that last time I looked at, I think it was over 200,000 acres burned in that fire, which is about 25% contained. So there's still a lot of work to do for those firefighters and first responders. So most of the fires in L.A. are pretty much out, have been contained, which is a great thing. And, you know, my hat's off to the first responders and the firefighters that battled those blazes.
8,000 firefighters involved in these six fires down there. And boy, you talk about some true heroes. They are just that. All right, let's get to the games. Saturday, after the Bears-Lions, I love this. When late in the year they put these key games on Saturday, because the Chargers at Kansas City is one of the biggest games of the week. This right here is a battle for first place. Chargers had a chance to beat Kansas City early in the season, lost it down the stretch, and they tend to do that. It's been their history. What are your thoughts about this matchup? Kansas City started 5-0. The Chargers started 0-5. They're both now sitting at 7-6. Winner gets a game advantage with two left. Doesn't mean you won the division. However, if the Chargers lose, then they lose the tiebreaker. So they would have to sweep the board, and Kansas City would have to lose the last two.
No, it's a huge game. This is a heavyweight championship fight. I mean, as you stated earlier, I mean, the Chargers started off 0-4. The Chiefs were 4-0. escalating to that pivotal part of the season. And when you look, we talked to Anthony Lynn today, we talked to Phillip Rivers today, and they echoed the same sentiments. You know, the difference between the team that they faced early on in the regular season at StubHub versus the team that they're facing now as a percentage of the Chargers is the fact that Chargers finally have their identity. They finally have they know who they are. They're playing with confidence. Everybody's healthy for the most part. These guys have been playing together. And they're playing like they have a playoff mentality. Like they know they have to win every single game to win out in order for them to not only capture the division title, but to go have an opportunity to host a playoff game and go deep into the playoffs. So it starts on Saturday night. This rivalry between the Chargers and Chiefs goes back the last several years. And even talking to Phillip Rivers and how he loves to play in that environment. He loves the environment that Arrowhead brings with the fans and with the tenacity that the Chiefs defense brings with Justin Houston and guys like that. So when you look at what is at stake, yes, the Chargers know what's going on. I mean, they have everything to lose. But I think also, too, the one thing I've noticed about the Chargers leading into this game against the Chiefs is that they start to play a lot looser than they have in the beginning of the season. And I think that's going to be a huge factor. The Chiefs have a lot to lose as well because, hey, if you start tumbling at this point of the season and you happen to lose to the Chargers, who started out 0-4, and now they're controlling their own destiny, you just gave them the best Christmas gift ever in handing them pretty much the division and moving forward as they face the Jets and then home against the Raiders. But when you look at this team, the Chargers are playing extremely well offensively. The only thing that concerns me, again, is the running game. Melvin Gordon is going to have to get going early on than he did against Washington at StubHub. They're going to have to go to him very early, probably often. They're going to have to continue to play Keenan Allen out of the slot. They're going to have to continue to go to Hunter Henry, Tyrell Williams. You have Travis Benjamin. And then you might see a little bit more of Antonio Gates, especially within the red zone. So that's going to be a huge factor. The weather is going to be cold on both sides of the field. And, you know, the Chiefs have a lot at stake as well because they can't be seen as the team that started off hot and they just completely cooled off and had no momentum. It's going to be a huge embarrassment, not only to Andy Reid, but to Alex Smith as well.
Yeah, and in the end, you look at things, the Chargers, if you can't run the football with Melvin Gordon, then what you probably should do is get him out on some screens because he has pretty good hands. Listen, it's not all about him. I mean, they got to open the holes for him. Then he's got to get through them. And then you got to have the secondary blocks, and he's got to make that first guy miss in the open field. I understand that's his responsibility. But the play calling can still make him part of the game. If you can't initially attack the defense with the run, get him out and put him in different formations, send him in motion. Sometimes you got to keep the back there to block for the blitz and the stunts that are coming from the defense. But yeah, he is a valuable part to what the Chargers want to do in their extension of scoring, but there's other ways to get him the football if it's not just by handing it to him.
No, you're absolutely right. You're going to see a lot more screen passes, and then you're going to see some Brandon Oliver get mixed in there as well. I believe you'll see some Austin Ekeler. They're going to mix it up pretty well. Their goal is to try to keep the Chiefs' defense on their toes, and if they can do that somehow, because the Chiefs you know, their run protection has been atrocious the last couple of games, and so they're hoping that, hey, that streak continues with the pass rush as well. So I think when you look at what the Chargers have to do and what their mission is at hand, like I said, this is the calmest that I've seen the Chargers in a long time, and I think that's going to play to their advantage. They're not playing with, you know, as they say, they're not playing with the lemon booty. They're not up here all tight up and bothered. And no, they're playing with control, but they're playing loose. They're having fun. They're knowing they're looking to seize the moment, and I think they will seize the moment.
The Chiefs' offense is sixth in the league. Their defense, though, 28th. They give up 124 yards. Look, here's the deal. There's certain players that you have to look out for. Alex Smith, of course. Occasionally, they'll put him in a situation where he'll throw the ball deep. Haywood and some of the other players in San Diego secondary have really stepped their game up. We've never really seen a secondary that takes the football away on a consistent basis like the Chargers do and also their special teams.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you have guys like Trey Boston. You have guys like Casey Hayward who have been extremely effective out on the outside and been able to make things a little bit easier for guys on the interior. So you have guys that are alert, and then you also have to look out for the rookie Desmond King. He's been absolutely phenomenal in the last three games, especially last week against Washington at StubHub. So I think you're going to continue to see a maturation of Desmond King. I think you're going to continue to see the intensity of Trey Boston as well as Jahlil Adai. You're going to see Casey Hayward continue to be the top, one of the top corners in the NFL, play solid. And so that's going to be a nightmare for a guy like Alex Smith because they can beat you a lot of different ways defensively. The interior, we already know about Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, but also they have to worry about a guy named Denzel Perryman, who's been instrumental and been the glue of that defense ever since his return against Jacksonville. So Alex Smith is going to definitely have his hands full. I mean, but the defense, the Chargers defense is going to be full because you have to look at Kareem Hunt, Chadwick West. Those two guys have had coming off monster games last week against the Raiders. So look for them to continue to run the ball, I think, a little bit more than throwing it. Obviously, they're going to throw it, but if it comes down to it, they have two good backs that they can rely upon to get the ball in motion and move the chains.
Nick Hamilton, NBC Sports LA, morning after 8 to 10 a.m. on Saturdays. Hear him on Dash Radio. Now, on the other side, along with Alex Smith, you better look out for 87, Travis Kelce, the human sausage, they call him. Their tight end is going to be targeted over and over and over again. He's the key. And keep this in mind, Kareem Hunt, the running back for KC, and also Tariq Hill, the receivers, these two young players, early in the year during that five-game winning streak to start the season, they were on fire. No one could stop them. But once you get that film out there, defensive coordinators make adjustments. It's not always about, yeah, we can do this, we can force our will on you. Well, there's times when there's enough out there that you see on tape that you know how to make adjustments and you take away the secret weapons. But Travis Kelce is the guy the secondary better be the most concerned about. That's the favorite target for Alex Smith. And believe me, he's going to be trying to ring him up as much as possible.
Well, you're going to see a lot of bumps. You're going to see a lot of bump and run. You're going to see a lot of a mixture of that secondary. Gus Bradley has been extremely effective when it comes to making changes and mid-course corrections throughout the game. So if it becomes too much, look for Gus Bradley to start making some adjustments immediately. And he's very, like I said, he's been very effective this season when it comes to that. Travis is a beast. But at the same time, you can't contain him. You can't stop him, but you can't contain him enough where it forces Alex Smith to find another target.
Phillip Rivers is no quarterback in the league that's as good between the numbers. In other words, finding somebody in the middle of the field, he throws to the spot. And no one, I don't think anyone does it better than throwing to the spot where the receiver is. It's great when you're at practice. You know this. You're at the practices now every day. And you see the receiver, Phillip Rivers will loose the ball before the receiver even breaks and run to the spot. The ball is there. It's a thing you do over and over again to the point where you can do it in your sleep. That's what makes them so effective in the passing game. And have you ever seen a quarterback that slings it? He's like a three-quarter pitcher, right? He doesn't come over the top. He's not under the bottom, and he's not sidearm. He slings it three-quarters. I love watching Phillip Rivers play because the touch on the football, if you're a receiver, that's the quarterback you want throwing the ball to you because you're going to have time to run under it. He puts enough air under it, and he's got the height to throw it, and he slings it three quarters. Beautiful pass, a spiral every time.
No, it does. It kind of reminds me of Brett Favre, especially out of those two-step drops. Look, okay, find my target. And he's been so effective at that. And to me, what really has impressed me this season, we all know that Phillip Rivers has been known to have taller targets, usually 6'1 and above. He's able to aim and throw it right in their pathway. But for a guy like Travis Benjamin, who's 5'10", 5'11", maybe with shoes, I mean, he's been extremely effective to finding Travis Benjamin and being able to know how to locate Travis and know how to throw the ball where Travis can get it and have some yards after the catch. And so that, to me, has been the most impressive this season.
Let's go now to the other game up in Seattle concerning the other team in L.A. And let's face it, the Rams is still their town. Okay, the Rams were there originally in Anaheim. The Chargers were there in 1960, left, went to San Diego, came back this year. And I don't know what the crowd base is like. We'll talk about that in a moment. Well, let's talk about that before we move on. What's the crowd base like in San Diego at StubHub?
Well, in L.A., in Carson, rather. StubHub, it's about 50-50. Like, last week, in the week when they played the Browns, was probably the loudest I heard Charger fans in the stands. And that was kind of encouraging because you want to see, if you're the home team, you want to see your home fans there. Obviously, it's a place called 50-50 because you got 50% home fans, 50% away fans. So I think it's gotten a little bit better as the season has progressed, obviously because the Chargers have been playing a lot better than how they started. But it's still a place where you're going to have 50-50. They're going to have to definitely win this town over. Now, one way of winning this town over, obviously, is to continue to win and be impressive with your win and go deep into the playoffs. Even if they happen to make the conference championship and make it competitive, if they lose, people will still say, you know what, for a first-year run in L.A., this was a successful season, and it gives you hope for the seasons to come. Obviously, they have to draft well, but as of right now, there is a turning point. There is a point where it can escalate to a higher level, and you have fans that will come out and support and come out and look and watch this team perform and so long as they continue to win and be competitive. So that's what it looks like at StubHub. And like I said, it's L.A., man. There's so much to do out here. There's another team up north, up the 110 freeway north, that's also doing well. You're going to have to compete with that on various days that both teams have home games. So you have to just look at it from a different perspective. And like I said, it'll grow. Just give it time. It will grow.
Nick Hamilton, NBC Sports LA, here on the show. Game on. Let's move now to Seattle, where the Rams will walk in there with a chance to basically take the division. They're 2-point underdogs, 47.5 year total. Russell Wilson has been, I don't know why people aren't talking about him as MVP. Honestly, I mean, he has carried this team. At one point, before the last game, they had scored 30 touchdowns, the Seahawks. He had been responsible for either passing or rushing for 29 of them. You just don't find that in anybody, okay? So
right.
he's their pulse, all right? Their only hope. Of all the quarterbacks that have gone down, if Russell Wilson were ever to go down for Seattle, it's over, okay?
Yeah.
It's over. They have no shot of being a contender without their quarterback. Other teams have backups that can come in and at least be respectable. Russell Wilson is all. He's all that when he comes to Seattle. So they're playing the Rams. I'm not going to compare Jared Goff to Russell Wilson. We know the differences. On the other hand, you do have some weapons for the Rams. Todd Gurley, rushing, and then receiving, you've got Kupp. And kind of break it down, some of the other key players in the role for the L.A. Rams.
Well, you look at it, too. Hopefully, Robert Woods can return. I know that was his expected target date to return against this game coming off a shoulder injury. He's been sidelined with for the last 3 to 4 weeks almost. So hopefully Robert Woods can get some reps in. You got to look at Sammy Watkins, who's been extremely effective. You got to look at Cooper Kupp. You also can mix it in with Gerald Everett, Tyler Higbee, as you alluded to earlier about Todd Gurley, catching out of the backfield. And then Tavon Austin as well catching out of the backfield and getting some yardage. So that O-line with Andrew Whitworth and company is going to have to continue to protect Jared Goff and keep him upright, give him enough time to find his targets or to create a play where he can continue to extend the ball and extend the play and move the chains down the field in order to be in contention to score. If the Rams happen to get the ball first, they're going to have to set the tone early and often, and they're going to have to score. It's a very hard place to play. Century League Field is very loud. Kind of, even though it's a newer stadium, it has that old school feel to it. And as you said before, you know, Russell Wilson is the alpha and omega of the Seattle Seahawks. With so many guys that have gone down and with a raggedy O-line and a mediocre running game, Russell Wilson is going to be that guy for them to try to get the job done. And I was extremely impressed by Russell Wilson when they defeated the Philadelphia Eagles just a week prior, and a very tough Eagles team with Carson Wentz. So I know what's the defensive coordinator name escapes me at the moment.
Go past it.
But anyway, I know he's going to definitely continue to make adjustments because he is a defensive guru, Wade Phillips. Thank you. And so when Wade Phillips is analyzing and assessing guys like a Russell Wilson or the running game and things of that nature, best believe he's going to have those guys prepared. Even talking to Alec Ogletree last week, they knew exactly what they had to do. They knew that they tricked off an opportunity to beat the Philadelphia Eagles. So now they're going to take that aggression. They're going to be poised and march in the Century League field and try to get a W. Now, mind you, last time these two teams met, Seattle only escaped with a touchdown win,
right?
Because Cooper Kupp could not hold on to the ball. So now you have a different, more mature Rams team that understands and the importance of closing out games. And I think they can do it if they continue to play their type of game. Don't be bothered by the crowd too much. They've been practicing a lot of silent counts just to make sure, because the noise is going to be to the 10th power. And so they're going to have to be extremely prepared. But if they do win this game, they pretty much have the division wrapped up in the bag. They just have to continue to win out their next two games and then see where they fall in the playoff picture.
You know, for the Rams, tough loss against Seattle the first go-round. Tough loss against the Eagles, even though Carson Wentz went down. Foles came in and secured the victory. So they, against some big assignments, they've lost some key games. So the question is, have they arrived yet, or are they just a page away from making it and being that team? It may be next year, but maybe we find out this weekend. If they go into Seattle and win this ball game, then I think we have to really pay even more closer attention to them because they have arrived.
Well, you know what? I'll say this much. If they do happen to beat Seattle in a tough place to play, I still believe they're a year away. The reason why I say I think they're still a year away, even with the Seattle win, is because when you go into a playoff atmosphere, it's a totally different atmosphere. And a lot of teams have been there before. They have the experience to get them through, to know how to make certain plays, to close out games. And I still believe that this Rams team is a year away because they're still young. They're still kind of wet. They're damp behind the ears. They're no longer wet behind the ears, but they're still damp. And I think they're going to take that experience however far they go, whether it's even making it to the conference championship. They're going to take those experiences, learn from them, and then come back stronger next year. Now, next season, yeah, if they continue to stay healthy, add to that roster, I can see them being the number one and number two seed in the NFC. But as of right now where we stand, even with the Seattle win, I do think that they're still a year away because that experience is going to be the carrier. And you have a lot of other teams, especially with New Orleans, especially with Carolina, even Seattle can sneak in. Those teams have the experience.
Nick Hamilton, NBC Sports LA, morning after 8 to 10 a.m. Saturdays on Dash Radio. Check him out. Before you go, I'm going to ask you about this dreary place where it's cold always. They have no English for language. Restaurants serve a certain kind of food. It's dreary. It's a long ways from here. You have a son. Think you ever send him to Lithuania to play pro ball?
No, absolutely not. But I'm not going to be the loudmouth daddy either. So there's a huge difference right there. I'm loud on the radio and I'm loud on the air. But when it comes to dealing with my son, no. Listen, if they want to play in Lithuania, by all means, go for it. Hopefully, LeVar can join them for a year, get some type of citizenship, and we won't have to deal with him for a whole year. That would be music to my ears. Trust and believe. But in all actuality, as my man Ice Cube once said, put them overseas and they'll be begging to come back. They'll be back in about 2 months. They're not going to be able to handle that over there because it's a whole different atmosphere. The coaches are different. The landscape is different. The atmosphere is different. The fans are different. The competition they play with is much harder than they've ever experienced. It's not like NBA rules over there. If you ever remember the NBA rules in the 80s, where they got away with a whole lot that they wouldn't get away with today, that's what they're playing with over there in Lithuania, in those types of countries. And let me tell you something, LeVar wants to run his mouth here in the States. people will let him get away with it. Over there in Lithuania and Russia, run your mouth too much and see what happens. They're not having no secret meetings about see how we can tone you down. They're going to pull you into an office and sit you down and have a conversation with you face-to-face. And I guarantee you, LeVar will shut his mouth at that point because those people over there don't play.
Well, he lost his bid for China because of the sunglasses. That would have been the ideal place to play, but no way they're going to be able to play there now, ever. On the other hand, though, to me, the positive side is this, and there is a positive side. If you're them boys, you've got a dad that's a control freak, and you probably haven't, you probably missed your childhood, right, because of being sheltered. At least now you get to get away from him, you know? I'm sorry.
Hey, LeVar listen. LeVar will be over here. LeVar's going to try to run the baller brand.
He'll be at the Laker games. You know he will. He can't get enough of that.
Come on, see, don't do that to me, man. Come on, man. Let's try to go fund me where we can try to get LeVar to stay over here. How about that?
I think the kids are going to be happy to be away from daddy. I'm telling you.
They'll be begging to come back. I'm telling you, 2 months, they'll be begging to come back.
I don't
to
think
state.
So. I think if it was me and I had no freedom at all, why so serious? Daddy, I'm gone. Hey, let the folks know where they can reach you, man.
Sure thing, man. You can reach me at Nick Hamilton LA on Twitter and Instagram. You can also catch all my stories on the Chargers and the LA Rams on NBCLA.com. And on Saturdays, the morning after with Nick Hamilton on Dash Radio, as well as Bolts by the Horns podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes. We'll be talking nothing but Rams and Chargers.
Good work as always, brother. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot, C.
All right, go
talk
Bolts.
To you soon, man.
All right. Hey, let's put a smile on that face. Why so serious? I'm telling you, if I'm those kids, I'm happy, dude. I'll do more about this in Dope coming up. I'd like to remind you of our fourth annual toy drive, Toys for Hope, December 19th and 20th, next Tuesday and Wednesday. I'll be in front of Truly Nolan, Pest Control 6000 Southeastern across from the airport. Walmart's across the street. You can't miss me. The tent and everything will be set up. I'll be doing cut-ins on all the stations here at Lotus. And it's for the Nevada Childhood Cancer Foundation, fourth annual. Thanks to Kevin Hicks of Finley Acura, Sudden Impact, Truly Nolan, and the Nevada Childhood Cancer Foundation. The toys that you bring have to be new. Kids from infants to 23 years of age, and they've been doing this now for 23 years, I believe. I could have that number off a bit, but 6000 Southeastern, come see me. Patrick Lane is across street, right there on Eastern, and across the street you'll see Walmart, a bunch of other Del Taco and other places. I'm right there. So for 2 days, I'll be in that mobile home beginning next Tuesday, and I'll come out Thursday morning. I love doing it. So bring some toys, all right? All right, step away. We'll come back. Lighters up, Dope is next.
Man, I've been saving for a special occasion.
You look like a quarter pounder, man. Led Zeppelin.
Man, be careful with that, man.
Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for, man, that show is dope.
3:44 in the valley. Lighters up. Pass it. You, can you swim?
No, I sure can't.
You can't swim?
I told you I got.
You ain't black. Well, maybe you got some in you.
I'm saying.
You got some black in you, dog.
But I'm like, if you throw me in the water, you know, like, I'll.
You'll die.
I could survive. No. I can, you know, doggy paddle, make my way. But if it's something real, like if we're talking, you know, cruise ship or something, yeah, it's a wrap.
You're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm black and I can swim.
Oh, good for you.
I got myself when I was 10. Now, anyway, this couple was celebrating their honeymoon in the Caribbean. And the woman, even though her fears were to be eaten by a shark, she jumps in the water. The honeymoon nearly turned into a nightmare when she was almost mauled by a shark. You can watch the video.
God.
Okay, her husband posted pictures of the bloody aftermath on social media 2 days ago. Sarah Iggs' husband Evan Carroll showed her arm where the predator had sank its teeth into her. The video showed the shark coming close to the woman as she was swimming in the waters and the predators as part of the resort attraction at her hotel. Now, recalling the incident, Inc. said she initially thought the shark's presence was her husband playing a prank. Quote, mid-snorkeling with the sharks, I felt the whoosh of water. Something clamped down on my arm, and I assumed my husband was playing a prank on me, Inc. told Daily Mail. Less than a second later, I realized how much it hurt, and I looked past where my goggles were, blocking the side, and I saw the shark. He had my arm. I pulled away and got out of there. The nurse added the sharks typically never bite unless provoked via tail pulling, feeding, etc. But there was no tail pulling or feeding. She was just snorkeling. This woman is lucky. Ended the honeymoon with a bang, she wrote.
Wow.
Jaws had a piece of her. Look, if your biggest fear is being eaten by a shark, why go in the water? Okay? I mean, give me a break. One of my fears is, you know, I think one of the worst ways to go is to drown. So I'm not hanging out in the water. Yep. Forget it. I don't take baths. I take showers. Okay? You want to be safe? Running water is cool, but water around you? And there's sharks? I'm sorry. You're dope.
Man.
You're dope.
And on your honeymoon. Is it the honeymoon you said or the wedding?
Honeymoon.
So, yeah. Wow.
I don't think anything happened in the bedroom after that.
Wow. Let me get my rim shot here.
Okay.
So, and one last thing. You said she pulled away. So did she lose an arm or no? She
no, just got a big bite.
Cut up pretty good.
And the sharks are around her. It's weird.
Yeah,
it's
that's weird. That. The whole, to me, just the ocean in general is scary. We don't know. We know more about space than we know about the ocean. You go past a certain depth or however you want to quantify it, and it's mystery for, I mean, there's going to find out things years and years from now. That's scary. Still better than my marriage. All right. Where are my notes here? We got some awesome computers working here. So I'm going to tell this story from my cell phone.
Go ahead. I believe me, our computers are really bad mostly every day. So, yeah. But we make it.
Yeah.
We make it.
Yes, we do. Okay. Here it is. In the UK. As you know, I get like all my stories from the UK. A 45-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of burglary after a passerby saw a pair of legs sticking out of a building, like out of the window of a building, which the building is the DFC Chicken Shop. The man was found stuck in headfirst in a fan unit that he was apparently trying to break into the building through by a passerby. 5 hours later, around 9 a.m. is when they all like they figured it out. He tried to sneak in around like 3 or 4 in the morning. Got stuck, and no one noticed, I think, till the morning time. 5 hours later, the police arrived at 9 a.m. He'd been stuck there all night. They had to get the fire brigade to come in with the jaws of life. And, I wish I could, you know, somehow put the picture up for you guys, but it's literally just like, it's like a windowsill with two legs hanging out. And this poor guy's been, I mean, I don't know.
Did he get
like,
his chicken?
Well, my question is, you know, like, is this what he, you know, is this karma? Is that what he deserves for going in there? Because that's pretty rough. They had to take him to the hospital. I mean, I'm sure he was fine, ultimately.
Treat him like a chicken, wring his neck.
Right? Yeah. Was it that serious for the chicken? So I just thought he was kind of a dope, so.
Yeah, big time.
There you go.
All right, this right here is Dope City right here. Okay. Roy Moore, who was running for the Senate as a Republican. Mm-hmm. Okay, history was made. When Democratic, let's see, who took it? Doug Jones actually won the seat. So the election is going on. Now, Jake Tapper on CNN is interviewing Ted Crockett, who is Moore's spokesman, while the polls are being hit by the public. Okay, so you really don't know who's going to win. Now, Crockett, these dudes in the South, man, I mean, I'm sorry, not everyone. But if you're in the Deep South, man, sometimes your teaching is a certain way and you believe it because it was passed down generations. Dig what Ted Crockett, the spokesman for Roy Moore, says on Jake Tapper's show. This is cool, dead silence where there's dead air. Listen what he says about Muslims.
Judge Moore has also said that he doesn't think a Muslim member of Congress should be allowed to be in Congress. Why? Under what provision of the Constitution?
Because you have to swear on the Bible When you are before, I had to do it. I'm an elected official, three terms. I had to swear on a Bible. You have to swear on a Bible to be an elected official in the United States of America. He alleges that a Muslim cannot do that ethically, swearing on the Bible.
You don't actually have to swear on a Christian Bible. You can swear on anything, really. I don't know if you knew that. You can swear on a Jewish Bible.
Oh, no, I swore on the Bible. I've done it three times.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you've picked a Bible, but the law is not that you have to swear on a Christian Bible. That is not the law.
Dead air.
You don't know that? All right, Ted Crockett.
I don't know. I know that Donald Trump did it when we made him president.
Because he's Christian and he picked it. That's what he wanted to swear in on. Ted Crockett with the Moore campaign. Good luck tonight. Thank you so much for being here. My panel will react when
Merry
we get
Christmas,
back.
Merry Christmas, Jack.
Thank you, sir.
He put him on blast. You're ignorant and you're stupid. You have to swear on a Bible. A Muslim can't be in office because you have to swear on a Bible. And they don't believe in the Bible. Way to put him in place, Tapper. Ted Crockett. He is lost in space, okay?
No.
He's part of the outer limits. He has no clue. And neither does Roy Moore. And I'm not about the political side, whether he's left or right or whatever, red or blue. He is an alleged child molester, all right? Okay? So he didn't get in office. His life is ruined because he ruined some other lives. And that's the way the universe works. For this dude of his, Ted Crockett, to be put on blast and to get lost, I thought, Jake Tapper, that was dope. Dead air!
Yeah.
Wait, let me give him some dead air. Happy holidays to you.
You know what it is, too? That look. I've seen that look.
You see that look on his face?
I've seen that look on many people's faces, and I'm going to say it. They're
defeated.
Brainwashed.
Yep.
No. They're brainwashed to think, you know. And yeah, you're right. We can't get into politics and all that. But there's just some things that are facts. And that's a great example. It doesn't matter what you believe in. It's just a simple fact, a written rule that, you know, these politicians, blah, blah, blah. They don't have to swear on a Bible and all that. And you just can't believe it because you're so brainwashed to think that.
And the thing is, you hear what you want to hear.
Exactly.
And you believe what you want to believe. Sometimes, I mean, realistically, be honest. Just use common sense. This dude right here has got to be in his at least 50s or 60s, and he doesn't even know this already. And he's a spokesman
for
Roy Moore. That's why they both went down and burned.
Yeah.
They crashed and burned together. God bless them.
Yeah, that's dope to me.
You got one more?
And I love the announcer too. The guy.
Good stuff, Dapper.
Yeah. You know what? I'll tell you this quick story. I wish I had a visual for you. A 71-year-old. Grandpa by the name of Matt Hopkins, also known as the Hip Hop Grandpa, OG Mr. Matt. He's in Center City, Philly. He goes outside City Hall and dresses in red and green and a Santa hat because he's too skinny to be Santa, so he's an elf. And he dances to songs, like hip hop songs and stuff. They said Rocking Around the Christmas Tree is one of them. Comes out of his cell phone speakers. And I just thought that was pretty dope. He's a former music teacher. He just from South Philly. He just wanted to, you know, kind of give some stuff back to the community. Kids and whatnot, so nothing hipper, nothing doper than a 71-year-old who's down with the culture.
I like to see it. I like to see.
I'll show you.
It's up there on YouTube.
Give me 45 minutes, and the window should load up by then. It should be good.
Yeah, we'll try to work on the computer situation, but we're making it. All right, I think it's time to do this giveaway.
About that time.
Keep in mind, and this is for the Vegas Bowl, Oregon and Boise come Saturday. I'll be out there at Sam Boyd Stadium this Saturday. The gates open at 9 o'clock. You can come and join me for the festivities. The kickoff is at 12:30. Tickets are still available at $35, Boise State in Oregon. But I'll be in the Bud Light Pregame Fan Fest tent. So you'll find me over there with the Fox tent and ESPN and also 920 NBC tent. So look for us there. Come and hang out with me before the big game. Meanwhile, let's do the giveaway. Let's do caller number 19 at Ari's like, huh? 702-365-9200. 702-365-9200. Thanks to our special guest, Nick Hamilton, NBC Sports LA. Catch him morning after 8 to 10 a.m. Saturdays on Dash Radio. For Ari, I'm Seat Williams. Folk, Chin's Tuck Low, Guards Up High. We'll see you on the show for more tomorrow. NBC Sports Radio 920. Game on. Game over.